Welcome, everyone, to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley, a national news and talk program dedicated to military veterans issues. And now, your hosts, David Corey and Richard Hurley.
Good evening. Welcome to the Veterans News Hour for December the 30th, 2019. This is David Corey along with my co-host, Richard Hurley. Thank you for joining us this evening. We have lots of news and information for veterans and their families, so I hope you'll stay tuned. First, though, let's go over to Richard Hurley. Hello, Richard.
Hey there, David. How are you? And good evening, everybody. Yes, we have a very informative show tonight. One of the things we're going to deal with is the Appeals Modernization Act, which went into full effect this past February 19th of 2019. We're going to talk about many changes which have resulted from that law, including new forms and new rules for claims and appeals. We'll also discuss the new appeal procedures for the Board of Veterans Appeals. David and I, prior to the February 19th, 2019 date, David and I had thoroughly researched the new Appeals Modernization Act. We felt that it was not going to benefit our veterans, and our opinion hasn't changed, and we've got examples to show it. We also are going to talk about the changes in the past year affecting the so-called Blue Water Navy veterans from the Vietnam War and the expansion of the Agent Orange rules for those veterans. In fact, I got a call today from a veteran, and he was on the USS Sacramento in Vietnam around 1973, and he was completely unaware of the new changes in the Agent Orange presumption as it affects the Blue Water Navy veterans. So there's a lot of information to talk about, a lot of information that you veterans need to hear about. I want to remind everybody that this is a call-in show. I say it every week. We welcome your views and your comments and your questions. So you can call us anytime during the show at 1-888-627-6008. Again, the toll-free call-in number is 1-888-627-6008. David and I want to hear from you veterans. We have guests on the show which occupy a lot of time, and when we don't have guests, David and I try to fill the hour with a lot of news, but it would be great to have some veterans call in, tell us about your experiences dealing with the VA, tell us about your current situation dealing with the VA. I'm sure you've got as many stories as David and I have. So, the show is called the Veterans News Hour. So I like to say this is your show. We're just the messengers. So please call in. And again, that number is 1-888-627-6008. Back to you, David.
Thanks, Richard. Yeah, it's in January, in just a few weeks, it will be our third year, the end of
That's
our
amazing.
Third year on BBS Radio Station 1, and it's been a great experience, and hopefully people have benefited from the news and information we've provided. But when we started the show in January of 2017, Richard and I wanted to, among other things, track legislation that was going to affect the veterans, and the timing was perfect to track a major overhaul of the Veterans Disability Claims and Appeals Program. And you have to realize that Congress does not, as we all know, Congress does not act quickly on things and doesn't do overhauls of practically anything very often. And starting in 2017, they, in response to many, many years of complaints about the current system at that time, as well as the tremendous backlog of claims on appeals and cases taking literally years, many years to get processed, Congress responded. But as Richard and I discussed starting in early 2017 and for the first 6 months of our show, we were tracking almost weekly what was going on in the congressional committees, the House and the Senate Veteran Committees. And by August of 2017, both houses overwhelmingly approved this Veterans Appeals Improvement and Modernization Act of 2017. The president signed it, and it had a lot of changes, a major overhaul, so the kind of thing that we may not see something similar for 20 years, maybe even longer than that. So what's it about? What's the law about? Well, the first thing is Congress said the VA, we know this is a lot of changes, so you, the VA, have a year and a half to figure out what this all means and then to implement it. So for that first year and a half, the VA did exactly that, and they started implementing on a kind of a trial voluntary basis what they called the Rapid Appeals Modernization Program, or RAMP program. The RAMP program was just a trial implementation, and as Richard said a few minutes ago, the law fully went into effect in February 19th of this year, 2019. So Richard and I are going to use this show tonight as kind of a year in review, and also kind of look ahead into the next year, 2020, but kind of a year in review of what we've observed so far with this law, what it involves, changes from the past, and things that veterans need to know. So before I start launching into things, Richard, what are your thoughts?
Well, you know, being down in the trenches with these veterans and watching it, you know, just, I like to maybe call it the eye level, you know, and seeing how it's being implemented. You know, all the discussions I have with representatives over at the VA who will remain anonymous, some of them, you know, actually help me quite a bit. And they have their own frustrations with the new system. So it just seems to me like not a heck of a lot of thought went into, and that's kind of crazy when you start thinking about Congress, but not a lot of thought went into what this this new system was going to be like when they decided that when it was passed, and the impact it has had. You know, I don't really see anything positive with it. I like to use the expression: all the VA is doing is they're kicking the can toward the BVA and putting more burden on the BVA, which, David, you and I kind of both agree that that's not necessarily a bad thing, because the BVA, and I've gotten a lot of decisions over the last 6 months, the BVA seems to be a lot more receptive in terms of coming down on the favorable side for veterans. Obviously, the downside to that is it takes more time, you know, because now you've got to appeal to the BVA, and then once the BVA makes the decision, they send it back to the VA, and then the VA has to further develop the case favorable to the veteran. So, you know, if you're a young veteran or, you know, middle-aged veteran, that's not a big deal, because, you know, you have the time, and as long as you filed your claim, you got the retro payment that's going to be there for you once the case is resolved. But if you're an older veteran, you know, you don't have that kind of time. And in that sense, it's kind of detrimental, and it doesn't really help that much. So, but you know, it's just what are you going to do? It is the system, and we got to deal with it the best we can. And I think David, I think you and I are doing the best we can when it comes to you know, helping vets. But one thing I will say before I send it back to you, David. And I'm going to say this a couple of times on the show. Veterans, if you think you can work the landmines of this new system by yourself, you're wrong. It is extremely complicated. The system today is more litigious than it's ever been before and more complicated. And if you really want to get a favorable result, the first go-around, on your appeal, but at least on the appeal, the first go-around, you really need assistance. And you need somebody who's educated and has done the research and the homework on how to get through the landmines on this new system. Back to you, David.
Yep, you're absolutely right. on those things. And as you said, the BVA, the Board of Veterans Appeals, I think is going to provide the best remedy on appeals compared to the other options. But basically what this new law does is it makes it easier for the VA and not so much for the veterans. It was in response to, as I said earlier, tremendous backlog of hundreds of thousands of cases that in the appeal process, there were several stages in the appeal process, and each stage there could be 2 to 3, even in some cases 4 or 5 years between each stage, and it was almost a never-ending cycle for the cases that go into the appeal system. So now it's the Veterans Appeal Improvement and Modernization Act basically overhauled the appeal process and said basically this, that a veteran files a disability claim, if the veteran's unhappy with the result, the veteran has essentially 3 review lanes under this new system. And those include the first, and this is not in order of priority, but just as I'll describe them, a supplemental claim lane if the veteran has new evidence that's new and relevant to support the claim. The VA will assist in gathering any new and relevant evidence, and then the VA will make a new decision based on that new evidence. But as you can see, it puts the burden on the veteran and the representative to come up with new evidence. But not required to choose that supplemental claim lane. They've got 2 other choices. The other one is a higher-level review lane. And the closest that this resembles to something in the old system, what the VA calls the legacy system, was the decision review officer process, which is now out. And the higher level review actually provides fewer rights for the veterans. You don't get a hearing. You don't get to submit any new evidence. It's basically someone higher in the VA at the regional office level, might be a different regional office than the one that originally made the decision, they do a review of everything that's already in the file. In other words, you don't get to submit new evidence. They're not going to go find new evidence for you, even if you suggest it's out there. They don't assist in gathering any evidence. And the higher-level reviewer is basically to look for any errors in what happened already. There's no right to a hearing. The closest you have to that would be an optional one-time informal phone conference with a higher-level reviewer and the veteran or the veteran's representative to discuss possible errors in the case. But what we found so far, at least what I've found over the last year, is the higher-level reviewers more often than not seem like they're just more of a rubber stamp of what already has occurred. Now, the third option is what Richard was talking earlier, the BVA or Board of Veterans Appeals, which is an administrative appeal board at the top of the food chain in the Department of Veteran Affairs. It's located in Washington, D.C., a few blocks north of the White House. And the BVA has existed for many, many decades in the VA system, but its role with this new law has shifted a bit. So that's the third option, or one of 3 options that the veteran has to appeal an unfavorable decision. And within that board, what they call the board lane, even within that lane, you have 3 different choices. You can choose the direct review, in which you don't submit new evidence, you don't get a hearing, and the BVA, the Board of Veterans Appeals, will make a decision simply based on what's already in the record. And because it doesn't involve a hearing, doesn't involve waiting for new evidence, it's supposedly the fastest of these 3 board lane options, and the VA makes those more of a priority than the other 2 options. The other option is what they call the evidence submission lane, where you can submit evidence. You have 90 days after you file your notice of disagreement to submit new evidence. So that's a rather short window. And then the third option is you get a hearing. And, Richard, in a moment, I'm going to turn it over to you to talk about your experience with the new telehearings, the office hearings, the experience you've had. But this third hearing option is basically this. You can have a live hearing face-to-face with a judge, now only if you go to Washington, D.C. It used to be that these judges would travel to all the regional offices, and you could literally wait 3, 4, 5 years to get one of those hearings. Even on the old system, you could get what's known as a video conference hearing, where you go to the nearest regional office, and you're connected up with a video conference, big screen TV basically, with a judge who's sitting at his or her office up in Washington, D.C., and you could choose that. That was supposedly a little faster to get that type of hearing, and that's under the old system. Under the new system, if you want a hearing, your choice is a video hearing. You don't get to see a traveling judge. The only time you get to see a judge face-to-face sitting in the same room is if you go to D.C. But the good news, the new variation, and something that it's a shame the VA hadn't thought of sooner, was something I'm going to have you talk about, Richard, which is not only can you get a video conference where you go to the regional office and the VA employees take care of all the computer logistics, all the video logistics of having a conference room with the equipment and everything, now you can also, they just started implementing this past year in 2019. It's possible that you can have this from the convenience of your own computer, that type of hearing. So, Richard, why don't you tell us about your experience, what you thought about that?
I will. Doug, if you're listening, I've got a client of mine was going to call in, and he just sent me a text saying that we were off the air. So I'm not sure if that's just his system or something on our end. But Doug, if you're listening, if you could just check on that. In the meantime, so to back up, to give a little bit of history, the standard practice would have been to show up at the St. Pete regional office or Montgomery regional office or wherever you are in the country, and have a video hearing with a BVA judge and your lawyer. And then we had situations where sometimes the client could not make it. And there were jurisdictions that said that, and I'm not going to say it was all jurisdictions, but I know in St. Pete it was their practice that if the client could not be there with you, then you couldn't show up. And here we are, which made no sense. Here you have power of attorney for your client. You represent the client, and you're not allowed to show up by yourself without the client, present the case with a detailed prepared statement by the veteran, and then proceed that way. So what did that leave you? It left you with, if a veteran just could not make it, and there are not just in Florida, but all throughout the country, there are situations where veterans just can't physically and or mentally make it to the hearing at their local regional office. And I'm using local very generously, because here in Florida, the local office is either in St. Pete or West Palm Beach. So if you're in Ocala, Florida, which is about 90 to 100 miles away, or up in Tallahassee or Jacksonville, that's not local. I don't care how you define it. That's not local. So I know in my case, over the last number of months, actually it's more than that, and I'm sure in other jurisdictions, we were complaining to the BVA saying, you know, you got to fix this stuff. And I used to have conversations with people at the BVA and tell them, just in my own criminal law experience, you know, you had situations where the client would be incarcerated and he'd show up on a screen from the county jail, and you would be in the courtroom with the judge. And I've had criminal cases where I was able to waive my client's appearance. So there was always ways to accommodate the situation and or the client. The BVA, and they started it about, I guess we're going on about 3 months, implemented a system where the hearing can take place, the video hearing can take place in the lawyer's office, and if the veteran has the capability, it could even take place in the veteran's living room. So, and it's pretty simple. I mean, I've had, you know, I've done three now, and they've between myself and two of the cases, the judge seemed to be kind of a duck out of water, needed assistance from the staff. But once we got it going, it was great. It was absolutely great. There was no time limitation. There was nobody, you know, knocking on the door. I mean, you know, you were in the comfort of, I guess it's the comfort of your lawyer's office. And, you know, you had the judge's complete attention. And it was great. I mean, absolutely, I recommend it. Instead of, in lieu of going to your regional office, you know, if you're represented by an attorney out there, bring this to their attention. Hopefully they're aware of it, but maybe not. You know, I only came upon it because I was complaining to someone up at the BVA and about my situation with my client, and the person said, oh, by the way, Mr. Hurley, we've started doing this new procedure. And I said, well, why didn't you, you know, let us all know? Why didn't you put a notice out there? And I think since then they've done that. I know, David, you said you've seen that. So, but it's a great way of now doing the hearings. And I commend the BVA for doing this because it is great. I had a, you know, then when you're finished, they'll send you a survey. They send the client and the lawyer a survey and ask you to comment on the hearing and how you felt about it. I just had my client today send me a copy of his responses to the survey, and he was extremely favorable and, you know, very happy. He was praising the system. So that's the new system. One of the things I did want to talk about, we were talking about how complicated everything can get. I've got a new case, and the client, I think, was going to try to call in. In any event, he got what they call a statement of the case, which is a decision that the VA renders, and then they issue the statement of the case, and then the veteran and/or the lawyer needs to appeal that, and you have 60 days to appeal that that decision.
And Richard, that's under the legacy system, of which there are still thousands of cases being
right.
processed. The statement of the case isn't under the new system, but yeah,
that is correct. So, well, I'm bringing this to because this is just an example of when a veteran is trying to do something on their own and they're not getting the right information. So anyway, so this fella went ahead and he was running out. I think he was on day 58. He did have a veteran service officer that had been helping him who was unavailable, and the veteran realized that he had to file something like ASAP. So he went ahead and he got the appropriate form, the Form 9, and went ahead and filed the appeal. So when we met, you know, I asked him what the status was, and of course he said, you know, it's on appeal. It's been on appeal since 2016. That's terrific. So one of the things I always do whenever I'm initially getting a case is I reach out to somebody at the VA and kind of ask for a status and update, which I did in this case. And he indicated that on one of the claims, it was in the system, heading toward the BVA. Oh.
Yeah, we got a caller on line
one. We got Wayne. And Wayne? Are you
there? Hi. How you doing?
Hey, Wayne. How are you? I'm talking about your case because, you know, David and I constantly talk about how complicated the process is these days, and you were caught in a situation where And after I finish telling a little bit of the background, I want you to kind of give your own, you know, what you were feeling at the time that you had to get this thing through. So Wayne goes ahead and files the Form 9. And I, like I was saying before, I then contacted the VA and I said, what's the story? And he said, well, he said, one of the issues is before the BVA, but the other issues are not. They weren't appealed. And the VA went ahead and closed out the claims. So I contacted Wayne today, and I said, you know, this is the story. And so, Wayne, what was going on back then? I know you were under the gun, right?
Oh yeah, I was under the gun. My doctor had told me since I was getting worse that I needed to refile my claim, and I did refile my claim. And the doctor said, look, you've got to do something because you're getting worse and and here very soon you're not going to be able to provide for yourself. You're not going to be able to work. So I went ahead and entered, and they came back and raised my percentage. However, they kicked some things out. So I didn't agree with it at all. And they also kind of chastised me on some of the things I had on there, kind of belittled me on it. And so I didn't know what to do. I was trying to reach my VA counselor, but, I mean, such a good guy. But, unfortunately, he's a disabled vet, too, and he was having problems. And, you know, 2019 was not a good year for him. It was a year of surgeries, and surgeries it didn't take, and then it had to have more after he healed up and stuff like that. And so it's been a hard year for him, and he hasn't been able to give advice to the vets that he was working with, and which I was one of them. And so I was really at a loss and didn't know what to do. So I filed the Form 9 to keep my case open. And one of the things that was in my record, I even sent him a copy of what happened to me in the military and the doctor's visit and what it was, evidence that it happened in the military, and they still kicked it out. So I figured I'd go ahead and write that in there, send it to keep the whole case open. I had no idea. It doesn't say it in the forms that if you don't list everything, they will kick everything out, you know, that you don't mention that you didn't object to it or challenge it. And they never informed me of that either. So now, as it turns out, after you and I spoke today, they closed everything out and didn't even ask me about it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the form, when you look at the form, it while it may appear to be clear, unless you can put in there to circle all, but there could be, you know, and I think this is where you got lost. You felt that, well, there was one issue that, and I believe this was your situation, that you were denied one of the claims and you felt, well, I got to put that one in there. But you just assumed that the other ones, and you have ratings for those, minimal ratings. And you just assumed that those ratings, those disabilities were going to just continue in the process. But, you know, you were really focused on the fact that you got denied for this very serious condition. And I think that was kind of your... Go ahead.
Yeah, it kind of ticked me off. I mean, I sent them evidence, and they come back and try to say, oh, it's a congenital from your family history. I'm like, no, I have no family history like that. Here's the evidence. I was in the military, sent to training, and when this happened, you know? And it just, I was off of military training when it happened, and they absolutely just basically denied it. You know, they didn't call me a liar, but then again, they did not say I wasn't. It just really bewildered me. It kind of ticked me off. And, you know, long and short of it is I'm not a lawyer. I might be good in my profession. I completed a lot of college, so I think I can pretty well understand things, but I'm just not a lawyer. And these guys just, they're like water. they seek every avenue they can to run downhill and leak, you know, out and get away, for lack of better words.
Yeah, and the veteran service officer that you were using, he was unavailable to discuss. So you You kind of had to shoot from the hip.
Yes, he still is. And thankfully, I was referred to you. And for those listening, no, I'm not doing a commercial for him. I'm just saying, thankfully, I was. I was referred actually by my tax guy.
Well, you know, the interesting thing here is that if you hadn't, and I'm not saying because of me, but if you hadn't come in and I hadn't reached out to the VA and asked for a status, an update on your file, you'd still be walking around thinking that you've got the one issue, you know, that all your issues were on appeal. And should, if you were still, you know, either going this alone or if you were, you know, with the veteran service officer, you would have shown up at a BVA hearing and the judge would have maybe looked down at you and said, well, the only issue that we see is this one issue. And your jaw would have dropped.
Absolutely.
You know, and you know, now we're going to try, you know, bring everything to the BVA's attention and show them, you know, that's basically harmless error on your part. And, you know, that all the issues need to be addressed. And, you know, I'm pretty confident the BVA does, they generally do the right thing. And based upon, you know, the emails I've seen and everything else, they would do the right thing. But the key here is that if we hadn't taken those steps, you'd be walking around maybe for the next year until you got a hearing notice, thinking everything was fine.
Yes.
That's kind of the message that we need to send out to other veterans. I'm sure there are a lot of you walking around thinking your claims are in the system and everything is fine. Well, I can tell you, you know, Wayne's case is a perfect example, and I've got many, many, many more, that you can't have that attitude, veterans. You've got to be proactive, and, you know, you've got to step up to the plate and periodically find out what the status of your case is, because, you know, I've had cases that literally were, you know, closed out. I mean, my contact down at the VA would send me an email back and say, Rick, you're going to be horrified, but so-and-so's case has been closed out. I'm like, what do you mean it's been closed out? I've got all this stuff going on. I got correspondence. He goes, I'm just telling you, it's been closed out. Someone pushed a button and ended the veteran's case. And fortunately, you know, we were able to get it back up and get it moving again. But, you know, if you don't periodically step up and get proactive and find out the status of your case, you know, come hearing time, you walk into a judge, and the judge just looks at you and says, well, we really don't have a case for you. Your jaw's going to drop, and the system will have failed you. So that's kind of the message here that we're sending out. And, Wayne, I really appreciate you calling in. And if you got any other advice for veterans, please pass it along right now.
Well, the only other thing I can say is, you know, unless you're a lawyer that has actually dealt with the VA, dealt with the claims system, you know, you might think you can do it yourself. You could possibly, you know, even be a doctor, well-educated. Just go and find somebody who knows this stuff, who works with this stuff, knows the ins and outs, preferably a lawyer, and go with that, because believe me, you do not know it all. You don't do it every day. I mean, you don't take your vehicle over to the hair salon to have it fixed. So, anyways, with that, I'll go and listen to the rest of the show. Thank you very much.
All right.
And again, I have to take my tax guy to lunch for introducing us. So anyway, have a good one.
All right. Good night.
Good night.
Well, there you go, David. There's, you know, another example of what can happen if you're not on top of things and proactive and have the right team. Again, I don't want to sit here and toot our horns or tell you got to get a lawyer. what I'm saying is you have to be proactive. And, you know, I think we try to say this as much as possible on the show. And as we're bringing up with the new system, it's even more complicated, which means you even need to be more on top of things. You've got to be more proactive. So, David, what do you think?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And I think part of it comes from the fact that those in the service are trained to, and in fact have to rely on other service members and on the, quote, the system and on the chain of command. It's part of the training. It's needed. It's necessary. And because they're taught to kind of trust the system to a certain extent, that trust extends to the VA. One thing that to the DOD and the VA's credit in the last 15 or so years, there's been more of a move for service members that are leaving active duty to initiate their claims before they leave active duty, and they may have a decision as soon as they leave active duty. But my point is that because there's so much trust, almost a blind trust in, quote, the system, that they don't realize how complex the VA disability system is and the importance of what you said, Rick, which was they really have to be proactive and be involved more in proving their case. And that starts with something that we kind of take for granted as lawyers, which is veterans, tell your story. Put it in a detailed written statement about what your disabilities are, the impact on your life, how you believe they are connected to the military service, as opposed to simply filling out the squares, the blocks on some VA forms, which is kind of the norm, if you will. But the new system, this Appeals Modernization Act, has many changes, and they were driven by the fact that cases would take many, many years. There was a huge backlog. And these changes, as we predicted back in 2017, as this legislation was moving through Congress, these changes are basically to make it easier for the VA. I understand that. The VA is understaffed, and they apparently don't have the time to do some of the common sense things that would prevent cases from even having to go to appeal, which is simply, for example, picking up the phone and calling the veteran or the representative and discussing the case before they make a decision. And in cases where we've seen that sort of communication, things go pretty well. I think you'd probably agree with that, Rick. You know, and we see that with some of the VA people that we deal with. They pick up the phone, and they're able to successfully resolve cases to the veteran's satisfaction, I will emphasize, without having to go to a decision review officer hearing. And if they'd only been doing that for years, they wouldn't have the backlog. They have much greater veteran satisfaction with the appeal system, and they might not have needed all these changes. But we've got about 15 minutes left in the show, and there's a couple other topics we want to talk about besides the Appeals Modernization Act. But before we leave this topic, I want to give you an example of a trap, as some veteran advocates call it, something that will catch veterans and even some of their representatives by surprise about this new law. And it goes along these lines. For decades, the way the system has been, if a veteran was already service-connected for a disability, let's say a back condition or post-traumatic stress or some other disability, and the veteran put in a claim for an increase because the disability got worse and the severity got worse, so they put in a claim for an increase, and let's say that increase was denied, and ultimately they appealed, and it went up to the Board of Veterans Appeals. Under the rules and the procedures that has existed for decades up until now under the new system, the Board of Veterans Appeals, when they finally made that decision, which might literally be 5 or 6 years after the veteran had filed the notice of disagreement, the BVA would look at the progression of the veteran's condition, getting worse, in other words, during the 5 or 6 years that the veteran was waiting for the Board of Veterans Appeals hearing. Okay. In other words, that was helpful, and the veteran did not have to file new claims every time he felt it or she felt that the condition was getting worse. Well, here's the trap under the new system, and I call it a trap because the VA has not been so far explaining this to veterans in their typical correspondence. The way it works now is veteran puts in a claim for an increase. Disability is getting worse. The regional office makes a decision, denies the increase, or perhaps issues an increase, but not as high as the veteran thinks. Well, under this Appeal Modernization Act, let's say the veteran files one of these new forms. One of the forms is the VA Form 10182, which is a Notice of Disagreement and Appeal to the Board of Veterans Appeals. And then ask for a hearing. They may, let's say that the veteran waits a couple years, 2-3 years for an actual hearing, and it finally gets to the board. The board, under the new system, unlike the old system, is only going to look at the evidence about whether an increased rating should apply from the time the veteran filed, and in some cases a year earlier than that, but only up until the point of the regional office's decision. In other words, ignoring any evidence after that regional office decision that might cover 2-3-4 year period where the condition might have been continuing to worsen. Okay? So that's the trap. The VA is not telling people about that. The rule is basically hidden from people, and unless you have a representative that's really on top of things, the veteran's not going to know that he or she needs to continue to file new claims at every point where the condition is getting worse. And that really, and of course, that should be, in order to have a chance of winning, it should be supported by medical evidence, not a frivolous claim. But the point is, this is a trap that's in the new system, because otherwise what will happen is the BVA, 2-4 years later, after they finally grant a hearing, even under the new system, there's going to be a wait. We'll only be looking at evidence for a much shorter window of time, and it'll catch these veterans and even an unfamiliar representative or advocate by surprise. That's just one example. There's a lot to it. Go ahead.
You know, the other thing, David, that I predict could happen in that situation is, so we go ahead and client comes in and conditions has worsened, and now we file the 526. EZ,
which is a claim form.
Yeah, right. I predict that I will get a letter back from the VA saying, your case is at the BVA. I don't even know if the VA will be aware.
You're absolutely right. I completely agree with you. In fact, I've gotten letters, we've both gotten letters in the past about this situation when an issue's on appeal and you file a new claim that things have gotten worse, the regional office, more often than not, will send back a letter saying, we're not going to process this new claim because the issues are already on appeal, not realizing that this is a new claim because the condition is in a worse situation. It's gotten worse. And clearly, under the new rules, we're going to have to educate the VA regional office about this. And if they continue to say, well, we're not going to adjudicate this new claim for the worsening condition because the case is the issue or a similar issue is on appeal, then we're going to have to stick to our guns and basically say, well, we're protecting the record because at some point in the future, we're going to have to appeal that issue as well. But it's a matter of protecting the veteran because, you know, this disability compensation does not make veterans wealthy. It's basically enough to help them financially survive, especially if they have a rating less than 100%. It's not a whole lot of money. So this is the changes in this law are very dramatic. Richard, when you said earlier, you have a little more faith in the Board of Veterans Appeals. In my 20-plus years of dealing with the VA on disability claims, that hasn't always been the case. But fortunately, in the last 5-6 years, it seems like the Board of Veteran Appeals, probably with a turnover in judges and hiring new judges and with more education of those judges, their decisions seem to be more thorough, more accurate, and with less of a need to appeal above the BVA to the United States Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims, which is another avenue if the BVA makes errors. So there's a lot to it. Before we move on to the next topic, Richard, anything more you want to share about this so-called appeals monitor?
No, I think we've exhausted that. I'm sure we'll be getting back to that throughout the coming year, but let's move
on.
Okay,
well, let me jump to a completely different topic. And as I said earlier, the beginning of the show, Congress does not act quickly on issues. And here's another one, very recent change. The law was signed just 10 days ago, December 20th, on a really important topic for veteran survivors, which are typically widows more often than not. And it deals with the issue of survivor benefit plan and the dependency indemnity compensation. Let me talk about those two real quick. Survivor benefit plan is a program that a veteran has served long enough in the military to receive a military pension. I'm not talking about the VA needs-based pension, but a military pension. The survivor benefit plan is like an insurance policy of sorts. It's an annuity that the veteran has to essentially pay into from his or her military retirement pay every month, so that if the veteran predeceases spouse, that, and in some cases, minor age children, that the spouse or minor age children will receive a portion of not 100%, but I think it's up to 55% of the. They can choose a lesser amount, but the max 55%. Of what the veteran had been receiving. That's the survivor benefit plan. It's been around for many, many decades. And like I say, it's essentially like an annuity program, okay? But it's something, it's not free. The veteran has to pay into it. And the rules are unbelievably complicated. They make the IRS look user-friendly when you're dealing with the survivor benefit plan rules and nuances. So that's part of what I'm talking about. The other part is dependency indemnity compensation, which is a survivor benefit, basically. Richard and I see this pretty frequently with representing widows whose spouse served in the military, died, and if the death was because of a service-connected disability, then the widow could receive this dependency indemnity compensation, which isn't a whole lot of money, but it's important, all right? And it's not needs-based either, like the widow's pension is needs-based. This is an important benefit, dependency indemnity compensation. Well, here's the background. For years, in federal statute, there's been an offset requirement, which means that if a widow is receiving both survivor benefit plan, which was paid into by the veteran, and dependency and indemnity compensation, they can't receive the full amount of both. There's an offset, and the widow would only receive more of the SBP that exceeds the dependency and indemnity compensation, which might be, for instance, let's say $1,300 or so, and the survivor benefit plan might be more than that. Well, after years and years of widows complaining to Congress that this is essentially an unfair tax on the widows, finally, this month, Congress changed it, and they made it as a small amendment to a much larger bill called the National Defense Authorization Act for fiscal year 2020. You would think that should end it, right? Well, no. Congress can rarely make things straightforward and easy. So instead of just phasing out this offset, The right thing, in my opinion, would have been to Congress just eliminate this offset rule so that widows could receive both the survivor benefit plan and the dependency indemnity compensation. But Congress doesn't make it that simple. Instead, they decide to phase out, over the next 3 years, this offset. So here's the news. For the year, calendar year 2020, the offset continues. For calendar year 2021, the widow can receive as much of the survivor benefit plan annuity that exceeds two-thirds of the dependency and indemnity compensation. And for calendar year 2022, the widow can receive that much of the annuity, the survivor benefit plan annuity that exceeds one-third of the dependency indemnity compensation. Now, if you think this sounds complicated, it is. It's not until calendar year 2023 that the full amount of both the annuity and the dependency indemnity compensation will be paid. Now, Defense Finance and Accounting Service, which those in the military know as DFAS, has a website for this, where they're going to be posting more information about implementation of this law. They're waiting on legal guidance. As of a day or two ago when I checked, they're waiting on more guidance to implement this law. Like I said, the law just went into effect, or just signed, December 20th, 2019, 10 days ago. But it's an important change in the law, and we'll see how DFAS may manage to mangle its implementation. Finally, a good development. So, okay, well, that's a major change. Richard, before we go to our Coaching Into Care wrap-up, what would you like to share?
Well, I just think, I don't know, we've covered a lot tonight. I think we need to just keep telling our veterans that you need to stay proactive. You need to stay hyper-vigilant. You know, it's kind of a shame that we have to say all this, but the reality is that the VA is not passing out compensation. They're making you fight for it, and that's a sad state of affairs here in our government, that we have to do that for our veterans. We have to make them fight for compensation that they should basically not have to fight for it, not have to work so hard, not have to, you know, go through landmines. But that's the way it is. So,
yeah, right, I can just add something real quick. As far as fighting for protection under the system, a big issue in the year ahead will be to monitor what's going on with the toxic effects of disabilities caused by the open-air burn pits that were used commonly in Iraq and Afghanistan. That open-air burn pit issue is something that we've been covering for a couple years now. There's legislation in Congress. It's not passed yet. And as far as creating a presumption like they do for the Agent Orange, there's been some legislation. There's a burn pit registry, which has a lot of flaws to it. Another thing real quick before we wrap up is that starting January 1st, the Navy Blue Water Veterans Agent Orange coverage, the statute that was passed last summer, the VA is supposed to start processing claims under that. We'll see how that goes. But there's a lot going on for veterans in the new year. Check out va.gov. It's a website that the VA is always adding more information, always improving. The VA does a lot of good things, both on the benefits side as well as the medical side. There's a lot of good people working for the VA, and we thank them for what they do. There's a lot of, you know, as we talk about, there's a lot of bureaucracy in the system, and we're going to try to keep on top of it to help our veterans. But why don't we wrap up with our coaching into care. We got two minutes.
Why don't you tell everyone about our Stop War Today project?
Okay, project that we started a while back. You can find our website, stopwar.today, not .com or .org. It's stopwar.today. It's basically a continuation of our experiences. We have a front row seat to the cost of war, the human effects of war, in representing many veterans. And so that project is a way to educate people about the full spectrum of the cost of war and to try to foster diplomacy and other non-military, non-war solutions to international conflict. We have an introductory video that's about 24 minutes long. Check it out, stopwar.today. And we're promoting a lot. Look under the resources tab. I know, Richard, one of your projects for the new year is work on a second film that deals specifically with the effects on veterans, like post-traumatic stress and other disabilities. So we've got a lot of projects in the work. If you'd like to support our work, go to stopwar.today, make a donation, contribute your other time, talent, your treasure to make this project the success it needs to be. So back over to you, Richard.
Yeah, and before we close tonight, I want to once again remind our veterans and their families about an important VA program called Coaching Into Care. This program helps veterans having a difficult time transitioning to home life. Returning home can be a tough adjustment, and loved ones can help. Coaching Into Care offers free coaching to help you help your veteran. Give the program a call, toll-free, 1-888-823-7458. Its hours are Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Again, the VA's Coaching Into Care number is 1-888-823-7458. In addition, I would like to once again remind listeners that if you know a veteran who is suicidal or in a crisis of any kind, the United States Department of Veteran Affairs also has a Veterans Crisis Line to help. Call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Many veterans have committed suicide because they did not get the help they needed. Help them get the care they need to cope with their problems. Once again, the Veterans Crisis Line can help. That number is 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Back to you, David.
Well, it's time for us to go for this evening. We'd like to thank all of you for listening to the Veterans News Hour here on BBS Radio Station 1. We'd like to thank our producer at BBS Radio, Mr. Doug Newsom. We hope you'll tune in next week, 7 p.m. Eastern, 6 Central, 5 Mountain, and 4 p.m. Pacific Time here on BBSRadio.com Station 1 for another edition of the Veterans News Hour. Until then, we hope you have a great week, and we hope you have a great year ahead.
Thank you for listening to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley. We hope you found this week's program very informative. Be sure to invite your friends and all the veterans you know to tune in next week when we'll have another great show on veterans issues. Meanwhile, you can listen to our other recorded episodes on the Veterans News Hour webpage on BBSRadio.com. Thanks again for listening to the Veterans News Hour.